Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. All right, so I have insomnia, but I've never slept better. And what's changed? Just a pillow. It's had such a positive impact on my life. And of course, I'm talking about MyPillow. I fall asleep faster, I stay asleep longer, and now you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Use the promo code Hannity, and Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has the special four-pack. Now you get 40% off two MyPillow premiums and two go-anywhere pillows. Now MyPillow is made here in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com right now or call 800-919-6090, promo code Hannity, to get Mike Lindell's special four-pack offer. You get two MyPillow premium pillows and two go-anywhere pillows for 40% off, and that means once those pillows arrive, you start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep-healing and recuperative sleep that you've been craving and you certainly deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity. You will love this pillow.
Hey, you guys, get down! Go that way! Get out of here! There's gunshots coming from over there! Go that way! Go that way! There's gunshots right here! Hey, they're shooting right at us, guys. Everybody stay down. Stay down.
Where's it at?
North of the Mandalay Bay. It's coming out of a window.
Is that a back?
Hey, get behind cover.
The body cam audio that was released by the police department last night. We continue from Las Vegas. Many thanks to our affiliate out here, News Talk 720 KDWN, the 50,000-watt blowtorch of freedom and freedom of speech. Yeah, it's still alive in America in spite of the left trying to snuff it out in every way imaginable. But I hope that people remember this. I've got this breach video again, and we've got so much information I'm going to get to today, but I just want to start and remind people how tough it is when it hits the fan for these officers and what it is that they do. Because what you heard is, while everybody is ducking, rightly so, running for cover, rightly so, well, they're making their way and moving their way in to try to get to where the shooter with an automatic weapon is, in the hopes that they can protect all the other people that are trying to find whatever little cover that they can as the shooting is ongoing. And you know, let me play, for example, this was you can hear the dispatch recording and the breach video. By the way, this goes for people like Obama. Remember, the Cambridge police didn't act so stupidly. You know, Trayvon That could have been me 35 years ago. Maybe you can wait for evidence to be presented and eyewitnesses to give testimony before you rush to judgment. After all, you're supposed to be a Harvard graduate and a brilliant attorney. And the same in the case of Ferguson. All right, we're in Vegas. The president now is speaking with some of the first responders. Let's dip in and listen to this.
Have you been able to find out anything else? It's a little bit soon.
Still a little bit soon. We have a couple good leads, and we're working our way through that. We're going to get the answer.
Yeah, no, there might be something there. But the wires are screwed up, but there might be something there. Well, again, I'm going to say a few words to your group, but I just wanted to come in and say hello and congratulate you. I was a fan before this. You know that. Everyone in this room knows that. A big fan before this. And I guess if you can be more of a fan, I guess I'm even more of a fan now. But you showed the world, and the world is watching, and you showed what professionalism is all about. Because that was about as fast, you know, something like that could take place for hours and hours and hours, and you can't figure it out. And you should be very proud, Sheriff.
So, just a matter of identification, Officer Hancock there at the end, to your right there, he was the first SWAT officer to engage the individual. And Officer Bitsko there, the canine officer, that assisted with that for the initial engagement. Officer Morris and Officer Burke there were the two officers I described that were in partnered with the security guard. So,
he did a good job, didn't he? He did a good job. Now, his option would have been tried to do it himself, but if it doesn't work, you wouldn't have had the information, maybe, right?
Right.
He did the right thing?
He did. We relied on him for the information.
Yeah, that's great. That's really great.
So everyone else seated and behind the press there were integral in saving numerous lives. The gentleman right to your left, that firefighter right there, was off duty watching the concert and remained to save several lives. So I think it's important for you to know that every single person in here was instrumental in life-saving measures. And these two young ladies here were our dispatchers. So they're probably the most important people in the room.
Calm and strong.
Yes.
Sharp.
If you ever have the opportunity to listen to the radio traffic, these two young ladies are amazing. There was a third young lady, but she decided to go to Cabo.
President, the first lady now, they're meeting with the heroes here in Vegas. Those first responders, including the dispatchers and people telling their stories now to the president, the first lady, Melania Trump. And this is now being picked up and covered on the Fox Broadcast Network. We'll dip back in again and see if this is ongoing. Do we have any more audio of that, or where did it?
Out of that room is the president sharing pleasantries.
I guess
and
they're now moving. They pushed the cameras out at this particular point. The president's going to have a private moment with them. That's my colleague, Shep Smith, obviously, the Fox News Channel. Well, I'm starting my 23rd year. I'm allowed to steal their coverage. Anyway, so they're meeting with the first responders, which is exactly what I was talking about. I just played the body cam audio. It's amazing what these men and women do. They're incredible heroes. Remember on 9/11, 2001, everybody appreciated what first responders do, what police do, what firemen do. I give my firemen friends in New York the hardest time. They get 24 hours on, then they get 3 days off. I'm like, what? And then they get what's called rack time. In other words, while they're on for 24 hours, if there's not a lot happening, they get to rest or they cook big dinners. They all cook. They're like a team of brothers, and, you know, it's someone's day to cook. And then the rookies, they end up doing all the hard work. And once you get some seniority, you don't have to spend time cleaning the fire trucks. I give them the hardest time. Like, who has a job like this? And then you remember 9/11. And then that call comes in, and then they go up when everyone else goes down. And they don't know if they're coming home. Remember, let's go to the dispatch. We just heard them mentioned and singled out, the two dispatch women that were there. I want you to listen to what they were telling fellow cops. And this was when the officers had made it to the 32nd floor and the breach into the room was about to occur at the Mandalay Bay. Now, remember, they know they're facing automatic fire. They don't know what's on the other side of that door. Now we know that, in fact, this guy had a camera and knew exactly where the cops were outside the door because he had set it up that way, designed it that way. So just listen to this is what the cops' real life situation. This is for them. as they're now trying to stop this guy from killing more people from the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay.
Listen to this, Jimmy. He's coming from upstairs in the Mandalay Bay. Upstairs in Mandalay Bay, halfway up, I see the shots coming from Mandalay Bay. We have multiple casualties. GSW is in the medical tent. Multiple casualties.
Repeat, just be advised, it is automatic fire. Fully automatic fire from an elevated position. Take cover.
Multiple GSWs to the chest, legs, femoral arteries, at the medical tent. At the medical tent, 4A, off of Guile, south of Reno.
Control 020.
020, go ahead.
It is set on the suspect's door. I need everybody in that hallway to be aware of it and get back. We need to pop this and see if we get any type of response from this guy to see if he's in here or if he's actually moved out somewhere else.
Copy. All units on the 32nd floor. SWAT has explosive breach. Everyone in the hallway needs to move back. All units move back.
Breach, breach, breach.
Breach, 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 and then you hear, and they go in, not knowing what they're facing. And maybe the next time a Ferguson happens, hands up, don't shoot, maybe people will say, all right, well, cops, they've earned the right being on the street to the assumption of innocence. Facts being presented, evidence being presented. In that particular case, there were more Americans that just happened to be African Americans that testified that said, yeah, Michael Brown was the one that reached into the cop car to grab the gun. That's where the first shot went off. And then Officer Wilson said, stop, stop, stop. And Michael Brown kept charging at him. It was never the narrative that was put out on day one and regurgitated by your corrupt news media in this country. Entire debate has been in this country. You know, we have a crisis in truth in this country, as everyone has their own particular agenda. Which makes me kind of want to go to a little bit of what we're going to talk about today. You know, if you listen to all of these people that rush to judgment and those that were their instinctive, impulsive reaction was to politicize this, and those that want to blame, reach out, not blame the people responsible, blame those that believe in the Second Amendment. Let's play Jimmy Kimmel. Republican leadership should pray to God for forgiveness over letting the gun lobby run the country. Listen to this.
I've been reading comments from people say this is terrible, but there's nothing we can do about it. But I disagree with that intensely, because of course there's something we can do about it. There are a lot of things we can do about it. But we don't, which is interesting, because when someone with a beard attacks us, we tap phones, we invoke travel bans, we build walls, we take every possible precaution to make sure it doesn't happen again. But when an American buys a gun and kills other Americans, then there's nothing we can do about that. President Trump is visiting Las Vegas on Wednesday. He spoke this morning, said he's praying for those who lost their lives. You know, in February, he also signed a bill that made it easier for people with severe mental illness to buy guns legally. The Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, the Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, a number of other lawmakers who won't do anything about this because the NRA has their balls in a money clip, also sent their thoughts and their prayers today, which is good. They should be praying. They should be praying for God to forgive them for letting the gun lobby run this country.
Pray to the God. Then he goes on to say critics of gun control know in their heart they bear some responsibility for the shootings. Same thing over with Trevor Noah. Sorry we live in a world where people will put guns before your lives. And Seth Meyers telling Congress, if you're not going to do anything about this, just be honest and tell us. And Steve Colbert, Trump wants to make America great again. Pass common sense gun control laws. Easy coming from people that I know have enough money to live in their expensive gated communities and have their own security. I'm sure all of them, when they're working, have their own security people around them. Most Americans don't. We'll get into this when we get back in more detail. 800-941-SHAWN. As we continue from Las Vegas, president now meeting with first responders as we speak. If he talks, we'll bring that to you. Quick break from Vegas. It's the Sean Hannity Show. All right, as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show, we're in Vegas. Many thanks, our friends, affiliates out here, News Talk 720, KDON Radio, KDWN. You know, I'm listening to all of these people. They want the discussion. They wanted the discussion 5 seconds after it happened. And meanwhile, we're just absorbing the tragedy, the misery, the pain, the destroyed lives here in all of this. And it gets grotesque after a while. Hannity says it's not time. All right, we're going to have a long 1-hour debate coming up in the program today. But to blame anybody other than the person responsible, I can go back. We can tell you all about the mass shootings that happened under Obama and Clinton and, you know, just run through Orlando and what happened with Omar Mateen at the Pulse nightclub, killing 50 people there. And of course, we can't say radical Islam, or we can talk about, you know, the one that happened, you know, in where was it? Boston, the Sarnoff brothers, or, you know, we could talk about Fort Hood, and we could talk about the Washington Navy Yard and Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. And, you know, everyone wants to jump in here. But when we come back, I'm going to tell you something nobody really wanted to ever talk about. And that was, how about all the people in Chicago? The numbers will blow you away. Not one of these people mentioned that. We'll give you the gun laws. We'll look at the psychological angle and much more.
Breaking news now. Here's Sean Hannity.
They will also be part of our success for the continuance of the investigation. So I think it's important for you to see what your leadership is providing you.
Well, I can tell you on behalf of our country, our great, great country, we want to thank you. You have been a real inspiration. This is a rough time, but if you didn't get up there so quickly, could have been worse, could have been a lot worse. And we just want to thank you. The whole world has watched, and they've seen professionalism like you rarely see. So I just want to thank you all very much. Appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm not going to get deep into it again tonight. I said what I had to say last night, but I do want to say something to these nuts who spent most of the day today on television and online attacking those of us who think we need to do something about the fact that 59 innocent people were killed. They say it's inappropriate to be talking about it because it's too soon. Well, maybe it's too soon for you because deep down inside, you know, in your heart, you know you bear some responsibility for the fact that almost anyone can get any weapon they want. Now you want to cover yourself until the storm of outrage passes. You can go back to your dirty business as usual. But it's not too soon for us because we're Americans. And last time I checked, the First Amendment is at least as important as the Second Amendment. So we really have to.
All right, 24 now till the top of the hour. 800-941-SHAWN is our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. I know I was late, Linda, but put on your microphone. I'm going to tell you why without giving away everything that I said.
Okay.
So I was on the phone with Eric, who is the brother of the shooter. And that's who I was talking to. And he took my call, knew who I was, and I was explaining, you know, it just was an interesting and a really sad call at the same time. And Sweet Baby James was in here listening. And I'll tell you why. He doesn't have a clue, it seems, why his brother did this. And he's just like, I don't see any religious ideology. I don't see any conversion or radicalism, which I'm going to get to in a second because the sheriff had brought that question up yesterday. And I was saying, would you like to tell your story? Which, by the way, this is what we do in the media. We ask people if they want to be interviewed. And he said, well, I'm going to try and raise money for the victims, and I will tell my story to anybody that gives me $1 million. And I said, well, I don't pay for interviews, but I can offer you a big and a fair form, is what I said. And in the course of this conversation, I mean, and I, he didn't do what his brother did. But, you know, what we do as families, it impacts everybody else. And you could just hear a level of outright pain, angst, he was bewildered how this all happened. And it wasn't, I didn't feel anything was contrived or manufactured. It was just raw emotion. I won't get into all of it, but it was clear that he definitely, you know, was just devastated over this whole thing. As I'm sure all 59 families that lost loved ones are devastated. And all other 527 families and friends are devastated by the injuries in all of this. I saw the pain last night. I couldn't believe the courage of one father. I'm not sure if you saw the show last night, but we had a father, and his son is a coach at UNLV for their hockey team. Got shot in the chest. And he's going to make it. I mean, it's one of those situations where literally the doctor said this guy is big and strong, big hockey player. If it wasn't for the muscle in his pecs, he probably would have died. Then you had a 34-year veteran of the police force here. His daughter was at the concert, and it took him 53 minutes for him to find his daughter that day. Can you imagine? That's 53 minutes of hell. And you take all of the lives of all the nearly 30,000 people there, and that's what they all went through. And it's just this to me has become a mystery. I cannot wrap my arms around why this happened. And after talking to the brother, he obviously can't wrap his arms around it. And I think I felt he was being honest. I think it surprised him. I think he had no clue this was happening, which he had said, by the way, in a prior interview. You know, the human mind, body, and soul is extraordinarily complex at times. I think it can be simple, but it's complex. And now that was a pretty tough call. That's all I could really say. Do you understand what I'm saying without saying everything that we talked about? Linda?
I understand everything you're saying. I just wish you or James would tell me when you're going to take phone calls in the middle of a live radio show so I don't have to have a coronary.
Oh, did you have a coronary?
Ever so slightly.
Oh, you can handle it. You're stressed to the max anyway.
This is very true. I'm glad you were able to talk to me.
This is not okay.
No, it's not okay. There's some untold story here, and I cannot put my finger on it. It's like we're dealing with a ghost here. If the brother's telling me the truth, and there are no signs, no symptoms whatsoever, why? Why would somebody that is otherwise successful, a multimillionaire, healthy, has a girlfriend, why, oh, why would they go on a rampage knowing, plotting and planning and scheming to get this done? You know, now it turns out that this guy, I'm with a lot of interest, this woman, this girlfriend, he used the girlfriend's ID to check into the Mandalay Bay. The Vegas shooter's girlfriend was out of reach of the U.S. and came into Los Angeles late last night. We broke that story with Adam Housley on the show. And we have different stories about monies going to the Philippines and other countries. What was the money being delivered for? There's just too many unanswered questions here. And, you know, the shooter did pass the background checks for the weapons that he had gotten. You know, you have the politicizing of it. That's always a separate issue and apart. I'm looking at some of the other questions here. You know, the thing the sheriff said yesterday really struck me when Sheriff Joseph Lombardo, the Clark County Sheriff, gave a press conference and responded to questions about whether the Vegas shooter had been radicalized. And speaking to Lombardo, he said, well, I want to understand the motivation that you described, okay, to prevent any further incidents. And you know, did this person get radicalized unbeknownst to us? And we want to identify the source. Seems like they might be onto something here. Now, I can't follow that up with hours after this police chief announced that they were exploring the possibility of radicalization of Stephen Paddock. The president hinted that investigators are on the verge of the major breakthrough. And the president and first lady, they went to meet people in the hospital. Then they're meeting first responders as we speak. Anyway, they went to the trauma center. And anyway, as the president was departing, he said that officials are learning, quote, a lot more about the shooter, Stephen Paddock, and that information about him would be released at an appropriate time. I'd like to know what that means, because none of us know at this particular point. Now, CNN, it's always fake news, but I'm just telling you what they're saying. Mary Lou Danley is the girlfriend, now says that the Vegas shooter convinced her to leave the country just days before he gunned her down. Anyway, she's saying she was sent away and that she will not be there to interfere with what he's planning. Well, in that sense, according to Danley's sister, telling somebody in the Australian Gold Coast region, in that sense, I thank him for sparing my sister's life. and that her sister was really in love with him. So I don't know what information we're going to get out of that. What else? It's all of this is just a mystery. You know, the only other details we have is that, you know, this woman was sent away. Anyway, she was met by the FBI at LAX last night. She's considered a person of interest. Danley, believed to be an Australian citizen, had been in the Philippines for 10 days before the shooting. Her sisters claimed that Paddock sent her away for the shooting so she wouldn't interfere with his plans. Investigators say Paddock transported 100 grand to the Philippines shortly before the massacre. Paddock was known for berating his girlfriend at a local Starbucks, according to reports, and the abuse, quote, happened a lot. Records show that Danley and Paddock lived together in a two-bedroom home. Paddock had a total of 47 guns, 23 of which were in the hotel room. 12 had fully automatic fire. And he put cameras in the peephole of the room's door, and, you know, the rest we've talked about at length here. Let's go. Which line did you want me to go to? Linda? Oh, can you fix that? Adam is in Arizona. Adam, you're on the Sean Hannity Show. How are you, sir?
Hey, how you doing, Sean?
I'm good. Well, I'm sad, actually, but I'm good.
Yeah, I want to run a couple things by you and get your good analysis on this. You know, I think this shooting was the shortest amount of time that politicization was enacted. And what I'm looking at is a very sophisticated, planned out op. And this guy is just some regular schmo that put cameras in the peephole. He's got 26 weapons, all of which the Democrats would like to have banned. Why would he need 26 weapons in that building to do what he did? All he needed was two rifles and some drum magazines to do what he did. And he's got 26 rifles in this room scattered all over the floor for everybody to take pictures of. Something doesn't sit right with this. And then the Hearing Protection Act is being debated in Congress, and Hillary comes out talking about suppressors, but she calls them silencers, the doof. And, right. You know, and all of a sudden it gets shelved. And, you know, something stinks about this whole thing. I think he might have just been a dead guy on the floor when the cops got there.
Listen, I don't want to rush to judgment, and I appreciate your call. We don't know yet, and that's the point. And we're going to wait for the facts to come in. We're not going to speculate, but John Lott is going to join us later. Gun control in Europe is almost total. It hasn't stopped mass shootings like the attacks in Vegas. By the way, how many know that during the Obama presidency, over 3,900 murders in his adopted hometown of Chicago? Or that in the last 6 years of his presidency, 18,000 people shot. Frank is in White Plains, New York. Next, Sean Hannity Show. Welcome to Vegas. What's up, Frank? How are you?
Hi, Sean. Pleasure to speak to you. And I'm a big fan of yours. So
thank you.
Sean, I believe that truth is always able to be uncovered. You just ask questions. And all the facts are going to corroborate the other facts. That's just the way it works. They're going to, you know, the investigators, they're going to ask his girlfriends all kinds of questions. What his interests were? What did he do in his spare time? I think that the wealthy home he lived in was probably very private. And it seems from everything we're hearing that he might have been a kept-to-himself kind of guy. But as they uncover maybe what his interests were, that might uncover some stuff. They might check medical records. If he was told by a doctor he had limited time to live or anything like that, maybe he wanted to just go out this way. You know, they'll get to the truth eventually. Take time, and they just got to keep asking questions. And, you know, truth can't be hidden.
I've never seen a case, and this is why I brought a little bit of the conversation with his brother up here. I mean, I'm listening to him, and if you're asking me if I believe him, and I don't think I'm a pretty good judge of when people are totally BSing me. I didn't feel like he was BSing. I felt a man that was being tortured and agonizing over the fact that he did not know that this was coming. It's like this guy is a ghost and nobody knows anything about him. By the way, the president and the first lady met with meeting with first responders and civilians. The president's going to the podium in just a couple of minutes. When that happens, we'll bring that to you live right here on the Sean Hannity Show. We have a lot more to get to. Pat Buchanan will be coming up today. Then we're going to have a gun debate. Everyone wants it. We'll give it to you. We'll give it to you in a way the mainstream media never would. When the president speaks, we'll carry it. Looks like it's coming up soon. Straight ahead from News Talk 720 KDWN. We're at KDON Radio. We're in Vegas. Hannity tonight at 9. We have an incredible show. We'll continue. Here's Sean Hannity Show. We're in Vegas. Many thanks. News Talk 720 KDWN. KDON Radio. 50,000 watt blowtorch of freedom and freedom of speech. Hannity tonight from Vegas. We're getting deeper and deeper, trying to, take off layer after layer of this onion. We'll also have the gun debate that all these people on the left want to have, except we'll do it differently than everybody else because they don't fundamentally want a fair debate. The president now has just met with the first responders, and he's also been to the hospital. When we come back at the top of the hour, the president will be speaking. We will carry it in total for stations along the Sean Hannity Show network. We will begin that news conference from the top, and then we'll get to calls, Pat Buchanan, and so much more. 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back from Vegas in the studios of News Talk 720 KDWN.
We appreciate that, and I will tell you the people of Nevada and the extraordinary city have shown the world their incredible character, courage, and resolve. Nevada really is a very, very special place. I'm honored to be here today at the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department in the company of heroes. Thank you to our police, our firefighters, and to our first responders, and of course to Sheriff Lombardo. Incredible job you've done. Mayor Goodman. Hello, Mayor Goodman.
I couldn't be blocked by anything. No, you cannot. In the world.
Senator Heller. Thank you very much. Senator Cortez Masto, Majority Leader. Where is Kevin? Majority Leader. Kevin McCarthy. Adam Laxalt. All of the great congressmen that we have with us today from both parties. We just are very honored that you could be with us. And on behalf of the grateful nation, Melania and I thank each and every one of you in law enforcement. In the depths of horror, we will always find hope in the men and women who risk their lives for ours. The mass murder that took place on Sunday night fills America's heart with grief. America is truly a nation in mourning. I visited the hospital earlier today where many victims are still recovering from their wounds. And we ask God to ease their suffering and to speed their healing. We pray for the recovery of the injured and those injured officers who so bravely threw themselves into danger when duty called. And we grieve the loss of the law enforcement personnel who were killed in this vicious attack. Many families tonight will go to bed in a world that is suddenly empty. The people they so dearly love were torn away from them forever. Our souls are stricken with grief for every American who lost a husband or a wife, a mother or a father, a son or a daughter. We know that your sorrow feels endless. We stand together to help you carry your pain. You're not alone. We will never leave your side. Here at the police department, we remember one of our own who died this week, Charles Hartfelt. He was a very, very special person. Officer Hartfelt was a proud veteran, a devoted husband, a loving father. His death is a tragic loss for this police force, for the city, and for our great nation. We struggle for the words to explain to our children how such evil can exist, how there can be such cruelty and such suffering. But we cannot be defined by the evil that threatens us or the violence that incites such terror. We're defined by our love, our caring, and our courage. In the darkest moments, what shines most brightly is the goodness that thrives in the hearts of our people. That goodness is our lighthouse, and our solace is knowledge that the souls of those who passed are now at peace in heaven. Here on earth, we are blessed to be surrounded by heroes. As one eyewitness recounted this week, while everyone else was crouching, police officers were standing up as targets, just trying to direct people and tell them where to go. The officers were standing up in the line of fire to help those in danger and to find out where those horrible shots were coming from. Words cannot describe the bravery that the whole world witnessed on Sunday night. Americans defied death and hatred with love and with courage. When the word and the worst of humanity strikes, and strike it did, the best of humanity responds. Parents and spouses use their own bodies as shields to protect their loved ones. Americans dashed into a hail of bullets to rescue total strangers. Joining us today are many of the heroes who were here during that horrible moment, that horrible night, including Las Vegas Metropolitan Police officers Tyler Peterson and Tana Gurley, and civilian Aaron Stalker. Officer Peterson was on his second day on the job when the shooting began. I just visited him in the hospital. Within minutes, he joined a group of officers rushing between flying bullets to clear the fairground and save lives. Officer Gurley was off duty attending the concert. Although she was unarmed, as soon as the shooting began, she threw on a yellow police vest and began evacuating victims. And Aaron Stalker, a veteran, rushed to the scene to search for his loved ones, but when he couldn't find them, he began helping every person he could. As he recounts, we used the plastic barriers as gurneys to carry the injured to transportation. I made splints out of whatever I could find and used anything to stop the horrible bleeding. Among the wounded was the mother of Aaron's girlfriend. She is still in the hospital, and we are all pulling for her. To every hero we helped, every hero saved so many lives. And believe me, a grateful nation thanks you. The example of those whose final act was to sacrifice themselves for those they loved should inspire all of us to show more love every day for the people who grace our lives. In the months ahead, we will all have to wrestle with the horror of what has unfolded this week. But we will struggle through it together. We will endure the pain together, and we will overcome together as Americans. May God bless and watch over those who protect us. May God bring healing to the families of the wounded, the injured, and the fallen. And may God bless our great country, America. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, Governor. Thank you very much.
All right. That's the President of the United States. A very emotional moment for him after having been to the hospital to see the victims of this horrible shooting and met, obviously, is very impacted. Also meeting with the first responders. President goes on to say in this a lot of things, not the least of which is he talks about the bravery. I visited the hospital earlier today where many victims are still recovering from their wounds. We ask God to ease their suffering. We pray for the recovery of the injured and those injured officers that so bravely threw themselves into danger when duty called. We grieve the loss of law enforcement personnel who were killed in this vicious attack. Many families tonight will go to bed in a world that is suddenly empty, and the people that they so dearly love were torn away from them forever. And their souls are, our souls are stricken with grief for every American who lost a husband, a wife, a mother, a father, a son, a daughter. We know that your sorrow feels endless. We stand together to help you carry that pain. You're not alone. We will never use, he goes, we'll never leave your side. That was the president today. Anyway, 800-941-SHAWN, if you want to be a part of the program. Pretty touching of the president. I'm in the studios of News Talk 720 KDWN, our 50,000-watt blowtorch of freedom here. And there's a lot of stations as part of our cluster out here. And one of the guys that was at the concert was Mad Dog. He's on our sister affiliate station out here. What is 102.7, the Coyote?
Yes, sir. Ow, ow, ow. Can I just say it's an honor to sit here and talk to you, Sean? I've seen you for years, and as a media guy, man, it's an honor.
Well, the honor. Well, so what shift do you do?
I do mornings on the Coyote. So I actually came in Monday morning at 5 o'clock to do the show, and it was just surreal. I think I was in shock still at that point, you know?
Yeah, you were there.
Yeah, yeah. We were there all three weekends. You know, it's a big festival out here, and we're part of it. We gave out tickets. I think we had 150 of our listeners there at the festival.
Unbelievable.
22,000 people. Yeah, we were there all weekend. We were in the backstage area interviewing artists. I mean, and it was such a great weekend, Sean. Like, Friday, Saturday, even Sunday was so much fun. We were having a great time until, 10 o'clock or so.
Tell us what you saw. What did you see?
At the time, I was at our Coyote tent, so we were kind of away from the crowd. We were on the left side. If you were, the opposite side from Las Vegas Boulevard to Mandalay Bay, and we were just sitting there, waiting to, because every night we had an after party at Mandalay Bay at the Foundation Room.
Right.
So we were getting ready to tear down and go up there. So if it was 20, 30 minutes later, we might have been on our walk over to Mandalay Bay and been in the line.
Unbelievable.
Where we were sitting, we were kind of away from the main crowd, and we heard three. I heard three pops. What it sounded like, pop, 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 and I thought it was fireworks at first, which I thought was weird.
Which wouldn't
because,
be well, it happens at concerts, right?
But in the middle of the set, I wasn't sure what it was. Looked up in the sky and didn't see anything, so it startled me. And then you waited a couple seconds, and then you heard the rapid fire, pop, 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 and our first instinct was just to run.
Did you see those injured as you were trying to get cover?
I didn't because I got out of there so fast. If it was 10:08 by 10:10, I was across the street on the other side of the festival calling people to make sure that they had
This reminds me of? I was in New York on 9/11.
I'm from New York originally.
And it just reminds me. It just hangs in the air here.
It's crazy.
I mean, every person that I've talked to and everybody... I mean, I'm talking to people that literally they're just shattered over this, the trauma that they live with. And I remember the feeling after 9/11. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe on a bigger scale, but when you lose 59 people and you got 527 others, fighting for their lives and clinging to life in a hospital bed, it's just awful.
Yeah, I like I said, I lived through it too. I was in New York at that time, listening to Howard Stern and stuff as the buildings fell.
I re-listened to that broadcast pretty recently, and he's having fun the way Howard does, and he's talking about Pam Anderson, and then all of a sudden it starts unfolding.
Uh-huh. My brother is a police officer, so he was down there, digging through the rubble in the weeks to come. But yeah, it kind of has that same feel, I believe, too. It's something that's going to take a long time to heal. But yeah, we were set up. We just saw the mass of crowd running towards us. So our first reaction is just to book it. Save yourself. So we were right in front of the porta potties there.
Yeah.
So we ran in there. Some people were hiding in the porta potties. We thought originally, I didn't know where it was coming from. I thought they were on the festival grounds. I thought the shooter, we thought there was multiple, obviously, were on the festival grounds. So our first instinct was just to run, scatter.
Well,
so we jumped over a fence there and got out. And
Well, listen, the whole city's in our thoughts and prayers. I know there's audience in our thoughts and prayers. Your real name is Mike West, and how'd you get the name Mad Dog?
It was just
by the way, liberals call me a mad dog, too, so we could probably share. Remember Mike and the Mad Dog in New York, right?
Yep. I said, I lived there for 22 years of my life. One of our DJs wanted me to come up with the name, and I thought of it.
I got it. All right, all the best to you, and,
our
thoughts and prayers are with the city, obviously. All right, as we continue from Vegas, Pat Buchanan at the bottom of the hour. All right, let's get to our busy telephones here. Let's say hi to Brandon is in Wyoming. What's up, Brandon? How are you?
Oh, well, quite a bit. I think it's really important, Sean, that people focus on the lead time that this individual took planning this heinous act, and then look at those individuals and what they represented that were targeted. And it plays to a double accomplishment of a motive for that had two accomplishments. One, to take out those individuals that you didn't agree with or that you had a problem with, and two, to bring gun control back on top. I know it sounds pretty heinous and political to say that, but
we all have theories, but we just need to get the evidence for it. Is it plausible? Yeah, I guess a lot of things are plausible here. But the reality is, I mean, this is why when I spoke to this guy's brother, I mean, it's like he's a ghost. Nobody knows what this guy's even all about. It's bizarre. Really quickly, we'll squeeze in Mike in Mississippi. Mike, real quick, less than a minute.
The motivation could be that the casinos broke him. He was a high roller for 10 years getting all types of comps. You don't do that by winning money. He's been losing and bleeding money for the last 10 years. Maybe it's a revenge against Mandalay Bay. Who wants to rent that room again? Who wants to have a concert in that area again? He has damaged his reputation.
But there's no evidence that he's broke from anybody. He just sent his girlfriend or somebody $100,000. Part of it is it could be as simple as there's no agenda. The person's just evil. I just don't know. It's very hard to figure out. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. Pat Buchanan is next. All right, all these people, Kimmel, all these late night people, all these liberals, Democrats want a gun debate. That's coming up here and tonight, an important monologue on Hannity, 9 Eastern.
That she don't know anything as well. She was sent away. She was sent away so that she will be not there to interfere or put this planning.
Even though that she's going to the Philippines, until Steve said, Mary Lou, I found you a cheap ticket to the Philippines.
He sent her away so that he can plan what he's planning without interruptions. In that sense, I thank him for sparing my sister's life. But that won't be to compensate our 59 people's life.
Put the puzzles together, no one except Mary Lou, because Steve is not here to talk anymore. Only Mary Lou can maybe help. Probably was even shocked than us because she is more closer to him than us. You know, to be able to find out that the person you love or you live with can do such thing, and you thought you know the person yourself.
Mary Lou Dunley is my sister. She's a good person and gentle soul, a mother, a grandmother, a sister, a friend. If Mary Lou was there, this maybe as well didn't happen, because she won't let that happen. She would definitely stop something, whatever what he was planning.
I know these are harsh words, but I believe it in my heart. I think there is an unintentional endorsement that gets sent to these mass murderers when, after slaughter, Congress does nothing.
In the face of tens of thousands of gun deaths every year, too many Republicans in Congress have tried to enact the dream agenda of the NRA and the gun lobby.
Evil attacked Las Vegas. But we can do something about it. We can say enough is enough. We're saying enough to the evasion and the euphemism. They can take those euphemisms and stuff them.
And I think we have to ask ourselves the same question again. Is there nothing that we can do? No law. Nothing that we can do.
I've been reading comments from people who say this is terrible, but there's nothing we can do about it. But I disagree with that intensely, because of course there's something we can do about it. There are a lot of things we can do about it, but we don't, which is interesting, because when someone with a beard attacks us, we tap phones, we invoke travel bans, we build walls, we take every possible precaution to make sure it doesn't happen again. But when an American buys a gun and kills other Americans, then there's nothing we can do about that. President Trump is visiting Las Vegas on Wednesday. He spoke this morning, said he's praying for those who lost their lives. You know, in February, he also signed a bill that made it easier for people with severe mental illness to buy guns legally. The Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, the Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, a number of other lawmakers who won't do anything about this because the NRA has their balls in a money clip, also sent their thoughts and their prayers today, which is good. They should be praying. They should be praying for God to forgive them for letting the gun lobby run this country.
And the bar is so low right now that Congress can be heroes by doing literally anything. Universal background checks, or come up with a better answer. Enforce Obama's executive order that denied mentally ill gun purchases, or a better answer. Reinstate the assault weapons ban, or come up with a better answer. Anything but nothing. Doing nothing is cowardice. Doing something will take courage. And now, President Trump, you've said you wanted to be a transformative president who doesn't care about the way things have always been done in Washington, D.C. This is your chance to prove it. And I mean this sincerely. You do not owe the Republicans anything. You know the Republicans tried to stop you from being president. Well, screw them. You want to make America great again? Do something the last two presidents haven't been able to do. Pass any kind of common sense gun control legislation that the vast majority of Americans want.
All right, as we continue, Sean Hannity Show, joining us now to respond to all of this is Patrick J. Buchanan. And Pat Buchanan, as usual, we have the politicizing of a mass shooting. And, you know, all these years, all these shootings, all these people killed in Chicago, and I got to be honest, it's pretty unbelievable that, oh, nobody says a word. You know, we put up all the names of the people that were shot in Chicago and the thousands that were killed in Chicago while Obama's president. Nobody seemed to, you know, raise an eyebrow. Why is that?
Well, I think there's a real inconsistency on the left. You're exactly right. I mean, you get far more killed in Chicago in 1 year than you do in any number of cities put together, and it's because people have got guns in violation of the law and shooting each other down. But I think some of these, Sean, serve to be occasions really for folks to get on their old hobby horses and ride, ride, ride. But let's take the assault weapon here, which were converted to full automatic. Does some law which says you're going to go to jail or you're going to pay a terrible fine if you do that, is that going to deter an individual who, when he converts it, is going to risk his life up there firing down on a lot of people? I mean, if you're willing to die shooting all these people and you're willing basically to commit suicide by cop, are you going to be deterred by some law passed by Congress that says you can't do it?
No, nobody that's capable of evil and willing to take out innocent men, women, and children are going to obey any law that's passed by anybody. That's
of course not. They're violating the highest law we have, and the highest law written on the heart, human heart, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not murder. They're violating the highest law we got on the books, again, against murder, first-degree murder, premeditated murder of a great number of people. And we're going to tell them, look, if you convert your gun, we're going to fine you. That's preposterous, and to think that's a deterrent.
Well, so what do you think in terms of where we go from here? Because you see what the left is trying to do. They're going to try and motivate this. I see all of these comments that, well, unless there's a mass shooting at a Trump rally, Republicans won't do anything. It was put out there. Did you see that?
Well, but all that stuff is not unfamiliar, and I think it passes over the head of most people. I do think there will be a heavy focus on the part of the Democratic Party on, you know, writing a law against the conversion of semi-automatic weapons like AR-15s and AK-47s to full automatic. And my guess is that we'll get a hearing in the Congress of the United States. But, you know, there are not only millions, as I understand it, there may be more than 10 million of these weapons out there. And the idea that somehow this is going to be efficacious, that it's going to stop this, it's not. And I'll tell you why, Sean. What did this guy want? when he went up there and plotted this and was there for 5 days bringing in guns and prepared the hall and the rest of it as cameras. He wanted what we eventually gave him. He wanted to end his life in a blaze of publicity and attention, and we've given it to him. The president spoke to it. I mean, columnists and commentators are out there. You yourself are out there, MSNBC, CNN, and we all, this is what these people crave. I think what he wanted to do was end his life as the greatest mass murderer in American history and have the world know that fact and the nation know that fact. And I think he succeeded in a sense.
You know, there is some clue that emerged last night. The Clark County Sheriff, Joseph Lombardo, gave this press conference and responding to a question whether the Vegas shooter, Stephen Paddock, had been radicalized. And he said, well, I want to understand the motivation that you described, and this is the question, and prevent further incidents. And, you know, well, did this person get radicalized unbeknownst to us, and we want to identify that source? Now, I've never really bought into the ISIS claim or the Islamic State's claim that they were responsible for this attack. There's no evidence of such. But I did notice that the president himself, he was speaking about this, and CBS News reported about this. He said that we're beginning to learn a lot more about the shooter, and that information about him would be released at an appropriate time. So it seems like they're beginning to put the pieces of the puzzle together.
Look, you obviously got to look into something like that. But it looked, I mean, from everything, it looks to me that we do know he wanted to end his life. We know how, he knew how he wanted to end his life. And he knew what one of the great rewards of ending his life by firing semi-automatic and automatic weapons into a crowd of 22,000 innocent concert goers at a country and music festival. He knew the kind of attention he would receive, that he would become known to the world. His picture's going to be on every front page. Now, was a triggering event something he got some sort of conversion? Well, I doubt it. They certainly ought to look into that whole bit. But this, to me, is more less like 9/11 than, say, Dylan Root or Klebold and the others out there at Columbine, and these folks that just, they're nobodies who want the world's attention and the nation's attention, all of us to know who they are. I mean, it's infamy. Sean, I can remember Charlie Whitman, 1966, climbing up into, after killing his wife and mother, he climbs up into the Texas Tower. He's an ex-Marine sniper, and he took down 41 people, leaving 15 dead. I can still see his picture, and I still remember his name. And I think he wanted that. I think that folks that do that, they just say, I'm going out in a blaze of what is glory for me, but I'm going out.
All right, Pat Buchanan, stay right there. We appreciate it. 800-941-SHAWN is our toll-free telephone number as we continue from Vegas. And News Talk 720 KDWN, Hannity tonight, our usual time now, our new time, 9 p.m. All right, as we continue, Patrick J. Buchanan is with us, a syndicated columnist, best-selling author, and, of course, worked for Presidents Reagan, Nixon, and Ford. I want to talk a little bit politically here. You know, it seems that there's nothing this president can do that anybody on the left is ever going to support, and there seems to be almost as much, if not more, and more intense opposition to the president from those within the Republican Party. As a result, they've been impotent and incapable of fulfilling basic fundamental promises, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it.
Well, Sean, I think that I've never seen the media, so I've seen hostile media, but I've never seen a media so remorseless and so relentless and so constant in its hostility. It's like it just criticizing every move, every day the president makes. And I think he's got a lot of problems on his plate right now with the Tillerson thing and North Korea and Puerto Rico and all the rest of it. But I think with regard to the Republicans, I know everybody's critical of McConnell, but you take a look, he's got three people take a walk on him, and he doesn't have a majority. And McCain does routinely, and Ms. Collins does routinely, and even my old buddy Rand Paul does routinely, and Murkowski does. And so I'm not sure how he can succeed if these people are taking a walk of him on him. But there's no question about it, Sean. The perception is that the Republican Party has been handed, you know, a tremendous franchise and told, go ahead, you've got the contract for America. Go ahead and get your job done. And they have produced and accomplished next to nothing. Although
why am I...
the deregulation is tremendous.
No, I think the president, everything he's been able to get done on his own, he's gotten done. And you got to give Paul Ryan a lot more credit. I mean, in terms of the bills that they passed in the House, there's 268 of them that they haven't even begun to take up in the Senate. They haven't even, Mitch McConnell hasn't even been able to get 50% of the president's appointments. I mean, it's taken him a year to do that. He was ill-prepared for repeal and replace. That, to me, was almost unforgivable. You would have thought in 7.5 years they would have built up a consensus plan that they actually mean. And we found out 100 House Republicans and at least 7 Senate Republicans, you know, were just giving us a bunch of show votes and had no intention on following through on what their promise was to us.
I think that's exactly right. I think that I don't think they anticipated for a second that Donald Trump would win, and so they could have gone on, you know, voting to repeal and replace Obamacare, you know, another 40 or 50 times if Hillary Clinton were president. And I think this came down on them. I think it was, frankly, a mistake to go first with the repeal of Obamacare. I think they should have moved with taxes. But that's right. But look, the point is, I did see one congressman, and one of the ones who's retiring, he made a good point. He said, you know, despite what it looks like, Mitch McConnell does not have a working majority in the United States Senate. And see, he's got Republicans who are chronic defectors. And even when you put on the line that, look, all of us have got to get together on this because we promise we'll do it, and even though you may dislike it, you can speak against it. But in the last analysis, you got to give us 50 votes so we can get it done. And they don't. And so I think that's the reality.
Well, you would think that in the old days, Pat, there used to be repercussions. You lose your chairmanship. You would, you know, your bill would get buried, but there's no repercussions. I just think Mitch McConnell's lost all control, and I think it's probably time for another leader. I'll tell you what I'd do, Pat. I'd put everybody in a room, and I'd say, you can't leave, and I'd turn off the air conditioner, and I'd buy pizza and beer and say, sit here until we figure it out. What's wrong with that?
Sean, I've got something along those lines. I agree with you. I also agree with this. Look, on these appointments, mm-hmm. Why doesn't the Senate just keep them in and don't even go home and let the Democrats filibuster and talk it all through again and again till they're tired of talking, and fill up those jobs in the departments and agencies that are still empty?
Because they're lazy. They're lazy. That's it. All right,
Pat
Buchanan.
They're Tuesday to Thursday, boys, and that's one of the reasons they all want to get out of town and get back to raising money and making speeches and appearances back home.
All right, Pat, I got to roll. Well, the American people are suffering now as a result of it. All right, the real truth, the real facts on the issue of weapons. More guns, less crime. It's a fact. It's an indisputable fact. John Lott's next.
Guys, get down! Go that way! Get out of here! There's gunshots coming from over there! Go that way! Go that way! There's gunshots right here!
Okay, they're shooting right at us, guys. Everybody stay down. Stay down.
Where's it at?
North of the Mandalay Bay. It's coming out of the window.
Hey, get behind cover.
Get down.
Let's get down, get down, get down.
I got a vest on.
Benny,
what? Stay as close as possible.
Where are you?
Go, go.
This way.
So we've talked about gun violence on this show before, and I'm not sure what else I can say. I also know nothing I say will make any difference at all. But to Congress, I would just like to say, are there no steps we can take as a nation to prevent gun violence? Or is this just how it is and how it's going to continue to be? Because when you say, which you always say, now is not the time to talk about it, what you really mean is there is never a time to talk about it. And it would be so much more honest if you would just admit that your plan is to never talk about it and never take any action.
All right, that was Seth Meyers. Prior to that, the body cam audio from the Las Vegas shooting. Maybe people can remember the sound and the danger that these cops are under every day. Before they rush to judgment. And you got all the late night hosts, Trevor Noah and Jimmy Kimmel and Seth Meyers and Stephen Colbert, you know, basically the same thing. You got the celebrities out there, you know, the geniuses like Lena Dunham. No way not to politicize this tragedy. It's about gender and race and access to guns. And people like Lady Gaga, you know, saying prayers are important, but Speaker Ryan and Donald Trump, blood is on the hands of those who have power to legislate. And we got geniuses and models now weighing in. Gigi Hadid, it sickens me, the case in which a terrorist can be sold a gun. Is it really worth all of those lives? And Alyssa Milano, doesn't your children's safety mean more than your right to own weapons that can kill on a mass scale? F you, NRA. And then we've got, let's see, Sophia Bush, Donald Trump, F you for this, truly, sincerely, America. You know, how out of touch are these people? You know, let's talk about the hypocrisy here. Okay, they want to disarm the American people and prevent the American people. Do you have the right to protect yourself, your family? Well, what are people going to do if you have evil in your heart and you want to destroy innocence? Like maybe you're going to strap a bomb on yourself and go into a crowded area. Or maybe you'll build a pressure cooker bomb and leave it like the Sarnoff brothers. Or maybe use a car as a weapon. All sorts of way to kill people if you're intent on killing innocent people. But it is interesting that a lot of these rich celebrities, that they live in their protected and gated communities, and when they're out in public, they have their armed guards. And, you know, same thing with the politicians like Hillary Clinton, who just waited 9 hours to start playing politics. We didn't even know how many were killed, how many were injured at the time. You know, you have two congressmen, Congressman Seth Moulton and a congresswoman as well, Catherine Clark. They wouldn't even have a moment of silence or participate in a moment of silence on the House floor. Pretty sick, pretty twisted. You know, a lot of these people, in the case of Congress, they have their own armed police force. That's to keep them safe. So you want to have the debate. All right, let's have the debate. I'm having the debate. But you got to also look at some other facts. John Lott, who's going to join us in a second, gun control in Europe is almost total, and it hasn't stopped mass shooting attacks like what we saw in Vegas. And he rightly points out that Europe has some of the strictest gun control laws on the planet, yet there are still mass shootings. And by the way, liberals are always morally outraged, these mass shootings. But, you know, I don't remember them when Obama was president. Now, I was talking about it. I even went as far to put the names of victims up on the screen. Not names like Trayvon Martin, not names like Freddie Gray, not names like Michael Brown, but put up the names and the victims, including young children in Chicago, when nobody else was talking about it. I think Obama mentioned it, what, three times while he was president. And during that presidency, 3,900 murders took place in his own home adopted town. Where was the outrage from the people on the left then? And what about the more than 18,000 people that were shot in Chicago just during the last 6 years of Obama's presidency? What did he do to help stop the violence then? You know, you look at the victims in this particular case and you just have to cry. Anyway, joining us to discuss and debate all of this, we have John Lott. He's the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. He wrote the best-selling book, now in multiple editions, More Guns, Less Crime. And Pat Gesualdo is with us. He's the founder and CEO of the DAD, and he's going to address the mental health aspects of all of this. Nicholas Irving is a former U.S. Army Ranger, special ops sniper, and author of The Reaper. And he can speak to the bump stock and weapon modifications that took place in this instance here in Vegas. John Lotto, I'll start with you. Every time I watch you debate, the fact that you even talk makes people on the left that are either interviewing you or debating you bubble and fizz like Alka-Seltzer in water because they don't want to hear the research facts that you give out.
Well, you know, I guess a lot of people aren't willing to accept the fact that they're both costs and benefits of the different types of laws that they have. And, you know, so many of these laws, we've just seen this in the last couple of days, they start talking about, you know, universal background checks or some other type of regulation on licensing. And they don't even ask whether or not it would have stopped the particular attack. I mean, President Obama, after each of the mass public shootings during his administration that he spoke on, the one regulation that he talked about were these universal background checks. But yet, it wouldn't have stopped a single one of these attacks. Not one during his administration. Not one in years before that. We have the New York Times yesterday, Nicholas Kristof, having an op-ed where the first thing he lists is those types of universal background checks. And there are other types of regulations, too. I mean, probably one of the more embarrassing examples of this was in July when we had the shooting against the Republican congressman. You had Terry McAuliffe, within like an hour, coming out publicly talking about a list of gun control laws that he said would go and stop the attack. And yet it turns out later that the person obtained his guns from Illinois, where in fact they already had all the entire list of gun laws that Terry McAuliffe was saying would be important for stopping these types of attacks. You would think they could at least wait a day until, or at least some hours until we know what the facts are before they tell us what rules and regulations would have stopped the attack.
But the bottom line is what they'll do is they'll slowly chip away and they'll say, okay, we'll use universal background checks. That doesn't work. Then they'll figure out some other standards by which they want to prevent people from buying and purchasing handguns. I mean, but ultimately, isn't their goal just to take away the right of the American people to keep and to bear arms?
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and I've come to that view over time. Take the universal background checks. There are a couple problems with them that I've pointed out for 17 years, but they're not willing to fix them. If they fixed them, I think it'd be easy for them to get them passed. So I'm in Washington, D.C. right now. It costs $175 to privately transfer a gun in Washington, D.C. because of the background checks. That may not stop you or I from being able to go and get a gun, but my research shows that it's poor blacks in particular, the people who are most likely to be victims of violent crime, who live in high-crime urban areas, who benefit the most from having the option to be able to go and protect themselves. $175, or even in some states where it may be as low as $55 to do this, that may make the difference between whether or not they're able to protect themselves and their families. If you go and say, look, you claim that this reduces violent crime. Well, as an economist, I would say whoever benefits from that should be the ones who pay for this. And if it's not just the law-abiding citizen who's going out of their way to do these background checks who would be benefiting, everybody would be benefiting. So pay for it out of general revenue. They will go ballistic if you suggest that. I'll just give you one simple example. In Colorado in 2013, when they were passing their background checks on private transfers, I got a call from some state legislators, and they asked me what amendment I would put up. And my suggestion, there was a state tax for transferring guns. My suggestion was to exempt people below the poverty level from having to pay the new state tax. With the exception of two pro-gun Democrats in the state house, every other Democrat in the state house there voted against exempting people below the poverty level from having to pay the state tax. Now, how many taxes can you think of that Democrats would fight tooth and nail against exempting people below the poverty level from having to pay?
All right, we got to take a break. Stay right there. And Pat Gesualdo is going to join us, Nicholas Irving, John Lott, who you just heard from. And we're going to continue this discussion, News Roundup Information Overload, into the next hour. Quick break, right back. We'll continue. All right, as we continue, we're in Vegas, the Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN. Well, we're having the debate all these late-night hosts and politicians want to have about guns and the Second Amendment in America, John Lott. Also joining us, Pat Gesualdo is with us, and Nicholas Irvine is with us. All right, Pat, from the mental health standpoint, there's also evil in the hearts and minds of human beings, because good people cannot, you know, look at a group of tens of thousands of people and start firing into that crowd in the hopes that they can kill some people.
No, that's absolutely true, Sean. Thanks for having me on. And, you know, for anything, I just want to say that my heart and my prayers are with all those victims and their families. It's just another evil, abhorrent act yet again, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, it's sad.
It is. And, you know, it really is a mental health issue. That's my entire perspective on the whole thing. That's exactly what I do. My organization works with people with disabilities. We help wounded soldiers, and I do a lot of advocacy. So I come from this a little bit different angle, where it's all mental health, because it really is a mental health issue. It's not a gun control issue. It's not a Republican issue. It's not a Democrat issue, you know, and this needs to be more than a conversation. This needs to be an initiative, you know. And listen, I get the fact that a lot of people sometimes overlook people with disabilities or the whole disability aspect of life. Because if a disability doesn't affect your family, unfortunately, then it goes unnoticed. You know, it's not a very sexy issue. I get that, you know. My situation, and the reason why I'm so involved in this, is that when I started my organization, I had a severe battle with a disability myself. Originally, doctors thought I had cerebral palsy, so I tried to speak at 4 years old, and I couldn't. I had a severe stuttering problem. I had braces on my legs from my ankles to my knees. I was severely dyslexic, so I couldn't read and write. So, you know, thankfully, through drumming, I pioneered the healing art of drum therapy that helps retrain the synapses in the brain. So through drumming, I was able to beat my disabilities 100% by the time I was in junior high. And so, Sean, and I'm not being narcissistic when I say that. The only reason why I say that is that I know the issues when it comes to disabilities. You know, I was one of those kids. You know, my family were one of those families. So I know firsthand.
But the bottom line is, how do you ascertain somebody's mentally ill? And isn't it true, if evil desires to kill are in your heart, aren't you going to find some way to do it?
No matter what, it's going to happen, unfortunately. You know, with the exception of divine intervention.
So there's no gun law that's going to prevent an evil person from killing if killing is on his mind and heart?
No, not at all.
Well, I think that tells it all.
Yeah. I mean, you know, listen, like I said in my article, I wrote an article because this is, you know, very near and dear to my heart, this issue. And, you know, of course, trying to get people to read the article, because it will help the mainstream population understand the whole disability issue in one short article. Of course, nobody wants to publish it because, you know, they think it's a Republican issue, but it's not.
Stay right there. We got to take a break. Pat Gesualdo is with us. John Lott is with us. And Nicholas Irvine, we'll get to them. And we'll also get a couple of calls in the next half hour, 800-941. Sean, you want to be a part of the program? Don't forget Hannity tonight, our new time, 9 Eastern, 6 o'clock Vegas time, as we are broadcasting. The president in Vegas today. We'll have all the latest developments. Also find out about who this girlfriend is and what we're learning more and more. And we'll raise the question that the sheriff raised. Was this person radicalized? That's 9 Eastern on Hannity tonight from Vegas. Quick break. Right back. We'll continue. All right, 25 till the top of the hour as we continue. Many thanks to our affiliate here in Vegas, News Talk 720, KDWN, KDON Radio, the 50,000-watt blowtorch of freedom and freedom of speech. John Lott is the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. Pat Gesualdo is with us, founder and CEO of the DAD, DAD, is addressing the mental health aspects of this. Also, Nicholas Irvine is with us, former U.S. Army Ranger, special ops sniper, author of The Reaper. And Nicholas, I want to bring you into this. You can talk about what is the bump stock and weapon modifications that took place here by Stephen Paddock when he was attacking these people from the Mandalay, you know, the Route 91 Harvest Festival. What have you been able to glean based on the information that's been revealed?
Thank you for having me on. Back a few years ago when the bump stock came out, I was in Vegas during an event called the SHOT Show. They have a bunch of weapons out there. You get a chance to go out and shoot and have fun and see the latest and greatest new innovations of weapons coming out for the next year or two. While out there, I got a chance to examine it and shoot the bump stock. And basically what it is, It's using the laws of inertia and physics. Opposed to putting your buttstock up against your shoulder pocket with the normal rifle and pulling into your shoulder pocket, you're pushing out. And that allows for the recoil to recoil back, bounce back up against your now forward pressure that you're applying on the weapon, and that creates that rapid fire movement, or that rapid fire that simulates fully automatic. No matter what you do about it, let's say if you decided to ban the bump stock and get rid of that, there's ways around that. And it took me a simple search on YouTube from some kid with over 900,000 views on how to simulate that with just using a belt loop on your pair of jeans. So that same exact fully automatic simulation of rifle fire can be used with a pair of jeans.
But I want to be very clear. What you're saying here is that you can take a weapon that is legal and turn it into an illegal weapon, or a semi-automatic into an automatic.
Exactly. Yeah, it takes no genius to do it. Anyone can do it with a simple search on Google or Ask Alexa. I'm sure she'll be able to find it too, but it's that simple. In order to get around that, we're looking at something where you have to ban all weapon systems. And, you know, let's say if that did happen, which, you know, I don't think it will, but if it did happen, it doesn't take a genius to walk down to his nearest Lowe's or home supply store and, you know, do exactly what they did in Oklahoma City.
You know, ultimately, John, that's such a good point. And ultimately, John, there's really no law that's going to prevent people from killing other people. And that was why I think you were making the point about Europe, and they have the strictest gun laws in the country. But by the way, so does Chicago. And yet we see more people getting shot up in Chicago than anywhere else, right?
Yeah, I mean, just look at France. France banned semi-automatic guns. I mean, not just machine guns, but all the terrorist attacks there in 2015, for example, involved machine guns. You had more casualties from the four mass public shootings in France in 2015, a country one-fifth our population, than you had in the entire 8 years of the Obama administration. 532 casualties in France in 1 year versus 527 in the United States. You know, you look at this guy, this killer in Las Vegas. He apparently had ammonia nitrate in his car. Let's say he hadn't been able to go and get a hotel room on the right side of the hotel to go and conduct this attack. Would he have driven the car into the crowd there and set it off? Apparently, according to the police, he had multiple homemade bombs at his home. I mean, these guys plan these types of attacks many months, years in advance. And when people plan these things that far in advance, it's simply extremely difficult to stop them from figuring out some way to go and conduct these types of attacks.
I know that you have a psychological perspective on this, which I think is interesting, and I'm reading you, Pat, I'm reading your article, and I've been reading it. The bottom line is, once the process, I've got to believe, from a mental health perspective, begins that you want to kill other people, doesn't it become a highly focused thought process of these people, an obsession almost, and those thoughts then become feelings, and the feelings get stronger and stronger and stronger, and then ultimately they create more thoughts, and then you're planning and plotting the scenario under which you want to act. And then if we look at this particular case, what do we see? We see a guy that, you know, used meticulous planning to get to prepare for this attack.
Well, yeah. And Sean, sometimes, you know, it doesn't even take that long. Sometimes it could just happen instantly, you know, set somebody off and there it is. It happens. I suspect, and I think that I'm not wrong on this, but we'll soon find out. You know, everybody's saying the brother came out about this person. I think the mother had said something. I don't know. The girlfriend had said something. But I suspect that for this to happen and the way that he planned this, and why is everybody so surprised? There's something in his background somewhere, I guarantee it, that somebody knew something and it's just not out yet. But it had to be, because he doesn't all of a sudden go from one day to being fine to doing this. This is over the course of time. We knew he was at the hotel for, what, 3 days? So, you know, we knew he was staking that out for 3 days. So there's something more going on here, and eventually it's going to come out.
You know, it's Monday morning quarterbacking is a lot easier on these things. You look at past mass public shootings during the Obama administration, 60% of the mass public shooters were actually seeing mental health care professionals before they engaged in their attacks. And yet not one single case were they identified as either a danger to themselves or others. So, you know, you may say somebody should have noticed something, but in fact, you look over the decades, and in fact, there's a large literature in academic psychology journals that go and talk about the fact that they simply aren't able to identify these individuals beforehand. People with mental illnesses tend to be much less violent than the general population, and these types of characters who do this horrible stuff are extremely rare. And so it's not too surprising that they have a very difficult time trying to do it. The issue is you just can't depend on being able to screen these people out. And then the question is, well, if that doesn't work, what types of backup lines of defense that you have? It doesn't apply to this last shooting, but for the vast majority of these shootings, they keep on occurring in places where guns are banned, that these criminals may be nutty in many ways, but they're not stupid. They try to find places where victims aren't able to go and defend themselves because they know it's going to be easier for them to kill people. They know
Vegas has pretty, I'll use the word liberal for lack of a better word, gun laws. I mean, but they were sitting ducks. I mean, it's not like people could fire back. This guy was, you know, 32 floors above
alcohol,
them.
Alcohol and weapons don't mix anyways, yeah.
No, I mean, that's
well, here's the other issue on that as well. You know, the other issue is, too, is that, yes, a lot of people that are under, psychological supervision and things like that. The other problem is that there's really no support. There isn't any, especially for the people that are violent. And there is a large, I've represented many people who are extremely violent. And, you know, the problem is that they're set free. They're walking among us. There's a lot of issues with the institutions who, you know, won't let some of these people stay for a long time. I mean, I've seen this time and time and time again for decades. And it's unfortunate.
There's a problem with any of these mass public shooters. I mean, I'm not saying that there aren't people who are violent that you may want to institutionalize, and there may be problems with institutionalizing. I'm just saying you can't name me one of these mass public shooters in the United States or in Europe, which, by the way, Europe has a casualty rate for mass public shootings that's about 50% higher than the casualty rate we have in the United States. You can't name one case that would fit the type of discussion that you're having there, though.
Well, they're all mentally ill, and that you know, yes, that might be a broad stroke, but they're all mentally ill. That's my point. And there is something in those backgrounds. No, they don't have to go around killing their dogs all the time. Of course not, or their pets or their neighbors. But my point is that they're mentally ill, and a lot of these issues will come up in some sort of way, whether especially at a younger age. And the point is that they're slipping through the system.
Many of these guys are seeing some of the top mental health care experts in the country. Santa Barbara killer there was seeing the head of Los Angeles County Children's Hospital for mental health, a worldwide recognized expert, and he was not able to identify the person as either a danger to himself or others. Mm-hmm. This is not uncommon. It's very difficult. I wish mental health care experts were able to go and identify these individuals beforehand, but they're not, and that raises questions about, well, what do you do if you can't possibly depend upon that?
Well, my take on that is that you're right. These people are very smart. Unfortunately, as evil as Osama bin Laden was, you know, he was brilliant, unfortunately. You know, and if people could only use that for good. But I can tell you specific cases where people have been in institutions for doing things, or even in jail for hurting somebody or doing something extremely violent. Now, not necessarily killing somebody, but almost to it, running people over with cars. And they're on suicide watch. And 20 minutes later, you know, I get a call that they're out on the street.
All right, let me bring Nick back in here. Go ahead, Nick. Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree 100% with everything that everyone's saying. There's no way to defend against it. I believe the root of all this does fall back on mental health. And we have to, I think, if there really wants to be a change, understand what is the root or the cause of these, what causes these individuals to go out and commit such things. You look at a place, let's say, for example, Chicago, what is causing, if it is a mental health issue, what is the underlying cause of the, anger for someone to go out and commit some crime against someone else that they don't know or anything? There's some type of anger there. What is the underlying issue? I think that, you know, if once we find that out, we'll be able to, I guess, further address the situation.
The main thing here is that, unfortunately, people are using this to a political advantage, which is just horrific. The Democrats can't, Hillary can't come out and say that. You know, it's not a Republican-Democrat issue, but we need to make this, here's how we help this whole situation, George. We can't make this a gun control issue. It has to be a mental health issue. And in order to do that, we need to make it a campaign. You know, we need to say that it, you know, we need to do something about this. People need to
What do you do? The experts can't identify these individuals as being the problems beforehand. So I mean,
they
you can go.
They absolutely can. No disrespect,
they can't.
But they absolutely
they can't.
Let me jump in and focus this for a second, Pat. Okay, you're saying they absolutely can identify him. How come nobody identified this guy? And I can't think of another case where they've been identified.
Yeah, they absolutely can. I have.
And by the way, then it raises another question. You know, if somebody goes into a shrink's office or a pastor's office and says, "Oh, I have thoughts of killing people," well, okay, what about, you know, patient-client privilege? What about, you know, clergy-client privilege? At what point does that person make the decision that this person is just struggling or this person really has, you know, is a real threat to society?
Well, you know, like I said, I think that, and I know for a fact that there have been many cases. Now, it's not every case. See, these people are very smart, okay? These people are very smart where they may pretend they don't have an issue. They can really sway somebody, including, you know, mental health professionals. Happens all the time. Absolutely. So the gentleman's right. John's right. It happens all the time. But my point is that we need to make this more, we need to make people more aware of this. And it can't be, the important thing here is that it's not a gun control issue. So what do we do, as you said? Well, I think that there needs to be some kind of foundation that says, that first says, okay, there's somebody with a mental health issue. Just because there are those people, you can't let the rest of us suffer who are normal and who want guns, you know? But at the same time, that needs to be addressed. So it needs to be a campaign.
All right, well, John, I want John to respond to that. John.
Look, I mean, you can go and spend all the money you want. I don't think it's going to make really any difference in terms of this. My concern is that, you know, if you want to have a good reason for spending mental health money beyond that, fine. But you have to worry about what do you do to try to stop these when you can't identify these individuals to begin with. And while I realize in this case things like gun-free zones aren't relevant for the issue of the Las Vegas shooter, you look, over 98% of the mass public shootings since 1970 have occurred in places where general citizens aren't able to go and defend themselves. Just look at the Scalise shooting that was occurred in July.
I got a break here, guys. We're going to end up having to let you go, Pat, John, and Nicholas. I want to thank you all for a pretty fascinating debate. And, you know, when can we? Well, we're debating it with more facts than the emotion that you get out of the media that just has a knee-jerk one, you know, just platitudes and bumper stickers that don't mean a whole lot. Short of if you don't ban all guns, then you're not going to get the result you want. All right, Hannity tonight, new time, 9 Eastern. Everybody wants a gun debate? Okay, we're going to have it tonight. Hannity, 9 Eastern, with facts and information you will never get from the mainstream left-wing ideological media. Also check in with the Clark County Fire Chief. He was at the scene of the shooting. You'll meet some of the other people that survived all of this. From Vegas, Hannity on the Fox News Channel, our new time, 9 Eastern, and a monologue with more information on guns than you could ever use in any debate. 9 Eastern. Hope you'll join us. See you back in New York tomorrow.